It was May 9th, 2014, and I was sitting in the Air Canada Centre in Toronto waiting to see City and Colour play a concert. I arrived early to catch the opening band, and I didn't know who they were or what they were going to sound like, but I enjoyed the possibility of hearing some new music. All of a sudden, I heard these bouncing keys and intriguing percussion with this groove that immediately caught my attention. The song was called Judgment, and it was coming from this four-piece band with an incredible style and a presence in such a large venue that made the room feel small. Now let's take it back a little bit. After that show in 2014, I did a little bit of research on the band and found out that they were from Montreal and that they had been a band since 2009. Around 2012-2013, Half Moon Run was touring extensively after Indica Records put out their first record, Dark Eyes. The band was over in London, England playing a show where Ben Lovett, that Ben Lovett from Mumford & Sons, happened to be in attendance. After the show, Ben not only invited Half Moon Run to open for Mumford & Sons on their upcoming tour, but also signed Half Moon Run to his label. Since then, the band has released their sophomore album, Sun Leads Me On, in 2015, and then their third studio record, A Blemish in the Great Light, in 2019. More recently, they have released a single called Grow Into Love, which was released on May 6, 2020. This week, I caught up with Connor Molander of Half Moon Run. Connor, thank you for joining me. First of all, you got this new single that just came out called Grow Into Love. It came out on May 6th. And, you know, coming off of your album cycle for A Blemish in the Great Light, I found that the single, it was a little bit different than some of the past music that you guys have put out. It felt a lot less percussive as some of your previous releases. Is that possibly a new direction that you guys are heading with your sound, or did you guys just want to try to mix things up a little bit?
In a way, I've said this before, I think all of us, what we have in common is we're rooted in folk in some way. We love playing folk music. We like singing folk songs. If we're going to play a cover, often it'll be a kind of a folky song. And so it's just something that we're always kind of dabbling with, but it's not really that often that we'll focus it onto our records, because I suppose, like, when we chose the track listing for Blemish in the Great Light, we were trying to keep a balanced palette. And so it looked like by the time that we had our full list of material that we were working with to choose from for the record, it got a little bit too folky for its own good, I think. And we wanted to make sure that some of the spacey and ambient and percussive, electronic, all those other textures were well represented as well. So we knew that we would dispatch that song at some point, and That was the time.
So just getting into, I was reading a little bit about your background with what instruments you play, and I found a huge list here. So like, you do some vocals, guitar, keys, piano, pedal steel, bass, and harmonica, among many instruments. All of you are multi-instrumentalists, and we've seen that a lot in a lot of the remote sessions that you guys have been posting, which have been wonderful to watch, by the way.
Thank you.
I was kind of wondering, when you guys are writing, and since you guys all have so much experience with all of these instruments, how you guys kind of decide who's going to play what on a song, or if that affects what happens when you go into the studio?
Right. Well, during songwriting, all manner of things along those lines happen. Often I'll find myself in a position where, you know, Dev will come up with the first little part of a song, and then Dylan will start playing a bit of drums. And so then I sit there and I think, and what can I add? And sometimes I'll run through four or five different instruments before I settle on what I actually want to play. And then often what will happen is someone will start to play one thing and then think of another thing that they want to play, and they don't have enough hands. And so we shuffle our parts around. We hand them off to each other, whoever's got a free hand. So we're not precious about our parts, I suppose, in that regard. We trade off. In some of these, we're calling them co-videos, these isolation sessions or whatever that we're doing. The instrumentation is actually set up in ways that it wasn't on the record. Since at first, we only had limited resources at our disposal in our homes, so we shuffled it up.
Right. Well, I was kind of thinking about this as well. The idea of, you know, a band of that is so close. A lot of bands go into studio and they'll bring in some other musicians, some hired guns to play some parts on records. Now, since you guys are so talented in the way that you can play all of these different instruments and go into the studio and do it all on your own, do you find that that helps translate the song ideas as a more pure form of what they originally were intended to be?
Huh, interesting. Well, when we're writing, usually part of the philosophy anyway, when we're writing, is that we don't really have any business taking it into the studio unless we've made it sound proper in the room, you know,
right.
Basically live is what I mean. There's a limit to that, but that's part of the philosophy. And then I think what happens when you get in the studio is that it always just goes to another place. It's part of the songwriting in a way that when you record it in the studio, it just goes somewhere else. And then when you take it on the road, it goes somewhere again. So it just kind of keeps changing for better or for worse. In terms of purity and all that, I couldn't say it. It always feels, you know, you're always, frankly, a little dissatisfied with the way that it goes. And, you know, once you get to that place where you played it live for a year or 5 years, then you're like, oh, man, if we could go back in the studio now, we'd really nail it. But, you know, on another hand, that doesn't even really matter. So I don't know. You just do your best and try to move on with your life, I guess, at some point.
Fair enough. So have you got, obviously you guys have all been in contact since COVID started. Have you guys been able to do any writing or anything like that since you've been at home?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. We've tried to experiment with just having little seed ideas and then trading the files around and all that kind of thing. Personally, I'm not super tech savvy. I don't like using computers to record very much, and so that's been a challenge for me. But it looks like it won't be too long before we'll be able to meet up in person. Maybe next week.
Are you more of a tape based guy then?
I actually do have a tape machine at home, and I've been learning that. I've been spending a lot of time doing that with my brother in the past week or two. He lives in the same building as me. But when we actually record with Half Moon Run, we don't use tape, but luckily there's an engineer and a producer and people that know how to use the computer, so I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go back, I was talking about those instruments there. One that I found very interesting, it's actually my favorite instrument, is pedal steel.
Right.
So I just kind of wanted to chat about that with you, because you don't find too many pedal steel players, at least in Ontario. There's very few that I've came across. I kind of just wanted to know where you started playing pedal steel, and because it's such a niche instrument.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. Well, like you, I've always loved the sound. I think it sounds just so gorgeous. There's a couple instruments that have that sound so amazing. I find that, you know, the harp can be that way and the cello can be that way. But pedal steel is one of them too. It just sounds so amazing. So I think it was around 2014 or 2015. I thought I could learn that. I just thought I could. And then, so there's one guy in Ontario, his name's Al Briscoe. And so I started to get into, he lives in Colborne, Ontario. And so I went there and I bought a pedal steel from him. And I started to find out that, man, the pedal steel world is funny. They have their forums and it's pretty insular. Yeah. You know, they have their own set of standards and like an album that will be very famous in the pedal steel world it's like out of print in the normal world. Like nobody has any idea what it is. So that's pretty funny. I don't play very conventionally. I don't use finger picks. I don't use shoes, which has become a problem because I got used to just the feel of having bare feet or socks. And so, man, you can imagine at live shows, what do? You know, I have to go from pedal steel to something else. So I have to wear, now I've been wearing loafers on stage so I can kick them off. So I'm a bit of a hack, but anyway, I'm okay at it now.
That's great. I mean, I've taken a couple pedal steel lessons, and I the guy that was teaching me, he was telling me to start playing with shoes on. So that's actually really funny.
That's what they say. So but Al Briscoe, the guy I mentioned, I went back to him to get my pedal steel tuned up about 4 years after I bought it. And I was feeling a little bit nervous about going in there because I was going to have to tell him like, well, you know, I don't wear shoes and I don't use finger picks. And I kind of messed around with the instruments a little bit to customize it. And I remember he said, well, that is the best thing possible. That if you have found your own path with the instrument, then that's the most meaningful thing you can do. So I remember thinking that, you know what, hell yeah, Al Briscoe, you know, he wasn't too stuck in the pedal steel world, like for his own good, you know?
That's great. Yeah. So you guys are based up in Montreal. Like, are you guys right in the city?
Yep. Right in the city.
So I kind of wanted to, I've talked to a couple of other bands about this in the past, and it was the idea of Francophone artists being able to break through into the Toronto GTA music scene, because it seems like we're not as exposed to Francophone artists as we should be. But I'm wondering if there is anything that you think that we can do as radio people or music people in general to merge the two cultures a little bit more.
Right. So Francophone, you mean specifically French language music?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been surrounded by that a little bit more, obviously, just from having lived here for 10 years. If there's anything we can do, I mean, it depends if you like it, you know, like, do you like it? You know, I guess that's the question there. I mean, I guess I'll just speak frankly. I feel privilege beyond belief to be kind of an adopted member of the Quebec cultural community, especially as an Anglo. I'm initially from British Columbia. And so I couldn't be more grateful, and there's nowhere else I'd rather live. But I still understand what the feeling is like to try to listen to music that's sung in another language. There's a impermeability to some extent that's there, you know? And so it's not something that you can force on people, that's for sure, you know, or say, you know, you'd be a better person if you listened to more French music. That I don't think it works that way. And so I'm not sure really. I guess if you're interested in it and you listen to it and then you like it, then try spinning it and say why you like it. But yeah, it's not the kind of thing you can force on anyone. That's for sure.
No, definitely not. I guess for me, it's just like the idea that it's not as available as I think that possibly it should be to us. I've seen a couple of artists create French versions of their music as well, which is very interesting. It's something that I've only been seeing, well, recently I've been noticing, but I find that that's kind of a nice introduction for some people.
Well, do you know what? I was just thinking, there's been a few times in the past that we've considered putting one of our songs in French, not making a French version of one of our songs, but actually writing songs with French lyrics. And that would be a good step in the direction. I think we should focus more on that. And maybe we will on our next writing cycle, because we have this kind of one idea that we were like, okay, if we could ever finish that song, I'll say it's called the Every Chord song, because that actually has every chord in it.
Okay.
But if we could ever get that song under control, that would be the one that we would sing in French. And so, now that I think about it, we should focus harder on that. Maybe I'll bring it up with the guys.
Amazing. The ticket stub thing. Did you manage to dig up a ticket stub there?
Well, I don't have a ticket stub, but what I do have is this shirt that I bought at a concert. So this is the shirt.
Amazing.
And so, and the year, maybe you can see on the back.
2006?
2006, yeah. So that was, I saw the Stones in 2006 when I was in grade 11 in Vancouver. And one of the funny things about that was, I think that the show was in like November, but it was supposed to be in the summer. It was supposed to be a couple months earlier. And it got canceled because, I don't know how old you are, maybe you're similar in age to me, but there was a point when Keith Richards fell out of a palm tree and injured himself. And that was in 2006. So actually my show was one of the shows. I had to wait like another 3 or 4 months while Keith Richards recovered from having fallen out of a tree. Yeah. And so I remember thinking like at that point in 2006, like, I'm lucky that I'm going to see the Stones while they're still kicking it. Keith Richards surely doesn't have that much longer in him. Surely they're going to die. And there's, you know, this might be the last chance I'll ever have to see the Stones. And here we are 15 years later.
Yeah.
And there's no signs of slowing down at all, you know? Yeah.
Incredible. Did you happen to catch their live stream performance that they did for, I can't remember what the television show was. It was near the beginning of COVID. It was for COVID relief.
Yeah, they sung "You Can't Always Get What You Want," I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Charlie Watts was air drumming the entire thing.
That's right. That's right. And Keith Richards was kind of mumbling along, out of tune, like, yeah.
Incredible. I saw the Stones back in 2016, and yeah, Keith, I'm very surprised that he's still kicking it up there and able to play.
Yeah, I know. You know, he's got that open tuning that he does. So like you can just put your one finger across the neck and then that, like, just do bar chords with this little pattern, and you're basically playing like Keith Richards.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a funny joke that he probably has rigor mortis in that one finger, but it doesn't matter because he only has to slide it up and down the neck of the guitar anyway.
That's awesome. Well, that's great. Man, yeah. So I guess really from that, just you guys have been doing it so well, just the performances from home. And unfortunately, that might be where we're stuck for the next little bit. What are your thoughts and how do you feel about all these like live stream concerts that people are doing and the idea of are you familiar with the drive-in concerts that they're starting to do?
I've heard of that. I mean, our agents and management have run that past us too. One of the first things they brought up was, what do you do about washrooms? What do you do if someone has to go pee? You know,
that's a good point.
Yeah. The answer so far has been, apparently you like do something, you like push a button or flash your lights and whatever. Some escort comes over, you know, and takes you to a washroom that, I don't know, you know, like, so I'm sure people are just peeing in bottles. But the other thing is the sound, like, you know, you're way far back in your car. Not everybody has a convertible, obviously, so it's hard to hear. So people are talking about using Bluetooth to go to your speakers, and then there's a delay and on. So I think all the kinks haven't been quite worked out with that plan yet, although it's the best thing anybody's come up with so far. Kosky, you asked me about the live stream. What do I think about all the live concerts and everything?
Yeah.
To be honest, like, if I'm not going to click on anything with a split screen and four dudes or whatever in each corner of the screen for a long time. I'm tired of it. So I'm glad people tend to like ours, but I'm not watching them myself.
For me, it's all the instant. Like I'm guilty of it too, because I've done a couple Instagram live things, but it's just so oversaturated. I've never, like, I go onto my phone and there's 10 live sessions happening at once. And I'm like, oh my God, that's way too much.
I know. I mean, whatever. It can't be that bad of a thing, but people are getting tired of it. I can't wait for live shows to come back.
Yeah, it's true. That's kind of why I'm doing this ticket stub thing, just to kind of reminisce a little bit on some greater shows. Last thing that I had for you here, I just wanted to bring it back a few years to Massey Hall in 2016. I had been listening to your music for quite a while. The first time I came across your music, you guys were opening for City in Color at the Air Canada Center.
Oh, yeah.
But then when you guys came back around, you did the Massey Hall thing. Now, I remember at some point, I feel like it was during the show or after, somebody was saying that almost everything that could go wrong that morning was going wrong as far as tech and everything like that. That's true. I was just kind of was wondering what was going on there and how you guys recovered and delivered such an incredible performance.
Oh man. Well, so each one of us has our own like space station of equipment, right? And we worked out this system. I don't know, maybe I'll be speaking tech language. It might not be relatable to everyone, but like it's a system with MIDI that every time we switch a song, you could just push one button on a MIDI controller and all of your settings on your pedals and whatnot and your outputs, they all change so that you can go into the next song very quickly. And it's great, except that when like that brain, the motherboard there, if something goes wrong with that, everything's so hardwired that it's so complicated that you have this huge disaster on your hands, because to manually patch every, remember what buttons to push and everything as the show goes along, it wouldn't really be feasible. And so luckily the guy who built the boards is in Toronto, and it was my board that it totally broke right before the show, and soundcheck was coming to a close. We had a string quartet that we hadn't worked with before that day. And so we were horrified that it was some horrible thing was going to happen, but somehow all the equipment got fixed. My thing breaking wasn't the only problem that we had before the show. Pretty stressful, but I mean, we've been touring for like 10 years, so we've seen it all. Speaking of ticket stubs, though, I remember from that show, because that Massey Hall's under renovation now, I think.
That's
the long
right,
renovation.
Yeah.
But at that show, I guess our sound guy, he really pushed the subs, and so he got the place really rumbling. And at the end of the show, he pushed it so hard that I remember right as we were finishing, fluttering down from the rafters way up high in the ceiling was a ticket stub, and it landed on the stage, and Devin picked it up, I think, and then we read the ticket stub, and it was a ticket for a New Year's party from, I'm going to get the exact date wrong, well, obviously January 1st, but I think it was 1914. It was like 100 years old, almost exactly 100 years old, this ticket stub. And so we gave it to the management of Massey Hall, and they put it in a little thing on the wall, I think. And so that was really nice.
That's so cool.
It's been up there for 100 years, yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing that it came from you guys pushing the subs so hard.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks so much for joining me, Connor. I just wanted to ask you anything that you're listening to right now. Just kind of, you know, if there's anything you want played on the show this week.
I listen to, yeah, sure. Well, anything?
Yeah, anything.
Yeah. There's a Sam Cooke song called Any Day Now.
Okay.
And it's from his early days as a gospel singer. So if you can find that, that'd be wonderful.
For sure, man. I'll definitely play that for you.
Thank you. Cool.
Great. It was so nice to meet you, man. And I really appreciate you you jumping on here, and hope you're keeping well with everything.
Likewise, man. It's my pleasure, Tyler.
All right. We'll talk to you some other time. All right.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
See ya.